And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Phil Condon is here. How you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil. I'm doing
Says
well.
Says your Steelworkers Local 1976.
That's my old local when I worked for the railway.
Nice shirt.
Yeah. It's a nice union. Proud to be associated
with. This is the Taylor Report. We're very organized. And we're going to talk to Zafar Bengash, Crescent International. And it's crescent-online.net. Zafar is eminently qualified to be talking about these events in the Middle East. And later in the show, we will talk to Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. Gowans did something, a public service, in my opinion, on his site, gowans.wordpress.com. He made available the most recent interview with President Assad of Syria. On the weekend, you might have read, I hope you did, a piece by James Bissett, I guess it is, a former Canadian ambassador to Yugoslavia, Albania, and Bulgaria, why bombing Syria breaks the law. And it's a very nice discussion of the very issues addressed by the president of Syria. Doing this thing which Canadians used to, I think, take for granted, which is international law exists. There are international institutions to protect and guarantee equal representation before those laws, and also commitment to peaceful resolution. And the President Assad of Syria speaks very eloquently about that in the interview presented by Mr. Gowans. And, of course, our former ambassador, James Bissett, who, by the way, has been trying to say this to Canada, almost all these little crises we've been going through, he has spoken up. And so I really urge listeners to go to those sites. But we're joined now by Zafar Bengash of crescent-online.net. Are you there, Zafar? Hello? Whoops. I bet he hears me, but I can't hear him. Hello, Zafar? Well, let me speak in praise of Zafar while we re-engage the line. Zafar has traveled throughout this region. By the way, he's originally, I believe, from Pakistan. We're going to be asking him about the role of Pakistan, among others, in the bombing that is taking place in Yemen at the moment. There are 10 countries engaged in the attacks on Yemen. And Pakistan, strangely enough, is part of the mix. So I think this is something that Zafar will be able to he probably has a close personal, you know, interest in this matter. There's another state, well, and this is, too, I'm going to be asking Zafar Bengash, but that is a state that has joined is Sudan. Now, if you don't know, Sudan is on the American list of terror-sponsoring states. Now, so Sudan has already carried out, they say, 3 missions against Yemen. Those are acts of war. And there are 4 countries on the list of terrorist states. By the way, it's laughable, of course. The first of those is Cuba. The next is Iran, the other is Syria, and lo and behold, Sudan, which is sometimes now known as North Sudan, or greater, I would call it Greater Sudan, since it is a very large population and territory, not to be confused with this strange thing called South Sudan, the spiritual leader of which is Billy Graham Jr., Now, Finian Cunningham, you can find him at Global Post, has been trying to, and her name is Samantha Power, and sometimes known as Weepy. And Samantha Power cares about humanity, and she's one of the great advocates of lists of those who sponsor terror. She's also for humanitarian intervention, and she's one of those who called out Omar Bashir, who is the president of Sudan. And so she seems very quiet at the moment. You see, Samantha, who has a great heart and a great soul and a great conscience, is not available for comment. She's either under her desk at the United Nations, or she might be hiding out somewhere in her, you know, home state, but she's not available to explain why America is coordinating the attacks. There are 10 countries that are committed to attacks on Yemen, and these are so-called Arab or African countries, plus Pakistan, which is a kind of, again, we need Zafar to explain this one. Why Pakistan is involved in this, I don't know. But the coordinator of the attacks is the United States. And the way we know it's a coordinated attack is that one of the attacking planes was shot down. I don't know if you know about this, Phil, but two of the Saudi pilots landed in what they call, in military lingo, the drink. They landed in the water. And so the Americans fished them out. So, you know, that is coordination. They knew exactly where they went down. They had ships in the area and picked them up. So it's a coordinated assault on Yemen. And I kind of like having this chance to make a preliminary discussion because these are all things we want to ask Zafar about. But the man that we admire a lot for his barbs for discussing the Middle East, the angry Arab professor at University of California I want to say Fresno, but it's not really Fresno. But at any rate, he has been making great fun of this because he says all their language has gone by the boards. And he says what you have is what you would expect. He said the richest country in the Middle East is attacking the poorest. And he said, and the richest country in the Middle East is supported in this by the richest countries in Europe. So you have the absolute poorest country under assault from the richest. What a happy occasion. I'll just say, by the way, I take a break on this point and remind you we expect to be talking to Zafar Bengash. If he hears me, I hope you're very patient. We're going to have at Betz Attun on Friday, April the 10th at 7 p.m. There will be a talk by John Philpott, a Montreal lawyer, who has represented accused before the various international criminal tribunals.
Yeah, that's 7:30, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Doors open 7:15 at Betz Attun for a 7:30 start.
Yeah. And there is a new book, Justice Belied. And this book was edited and put together by John Philpott. And he, as the editor, is, of course, will account for it. And there's a second speaker, and I have some interest in that point because I'm the second speaker. I worked in a tribunal at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda for a number of years. Listeners will know that. One of my lawyers, I'm an investigator, one of my lawyers was John Philpott. So, and incidentally, his client, whose name I love to show that I can pronounce, is Ziggy Ranirazo. And I only do that once a show. Known as Mr. Z, was acquitted. Rather important. Because that man, Ziggy Ranirazo, is, what do you know, I did it twice, is a the brother of the President Habyarimana's wife and was allegedly one of the great brains of the Rwanda war genocide. He was acquitted, I wanted to remind you. He was accused of being what they called a kazu. It turned out the kazu was a popular word used by their opponents. I think we're going to, because we want Zafar so much, we're going to take a break and we'll be back. This is the Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM. But I think we now have Zafar Bengash. There's Zafar.
Hello, Phil. Yes, finally we got connected. Yeah. How are you?
You're a patient man, Zafar. We have this crisis that's taking place just in the past few days of 10 states under the leadership of Saudi Arabia have decided to bomb Yemen. And well, we need a lot of guidance from you on this matter. In the name of what are they doing this, and what's your assessment of what kind of a crisis we have?
Basically, what this indicates is that the Saudi regime has panicked because in Yemen, their man who claimed that he was the legitimate president, the man's name is Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi, who had actually resigned in writing in January as president because he was unable to fulfill the agreement that had been signed earlier. Incidentally, that agreement was signed through the offices of the United Nations, under which certain agreements had to be fulfilled. But this man, Hadi, just simply refused to fulfill that agreement, and so he was forced to resign in January and put under house arrest in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
And on February 21st...
Yeah, and by the way, just to underline, so he violated an agreement which he had been undertaken with UN auspices.
That is correct, yes. And
so he should be in violation of, in other words, he's against us in the sense that there is an international community.
Exactly. Basically, what the agreement said was that there should be a transitional national government and that a new constitution has to be drafted so that it would include and incorporate all of the various groups that reside in Yemen. Mm-hmm. And once he basically was given the presidential position, he simply refused to comply with any of the agreements that he had signed. And so then he was forced to resign in January and put under house arrest. And it so happened that because of the chaos that exists in Yemen, he was able to flee Sana'a, the capital city, together with the former defense minister, Major General Mahmoud al-Subehi, and they fled to Aden, the port city at the south of the Arabian Peninsula. And there he took up position, and he essentially called upon Saudi Arabia and other countries, as well as the United Nations, that he was setting up that he is again the president.
Mm-hmm.
First he had resigned. Now he said, no, I'm again the president.
Yeah.
I withdraw my resignation.
Yes.
And I want everybody to relocate their embassies, the countries to relocate their embassies to Aden.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was what the Saudis wanted as well. Of course, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the U.S. and a number of other countries, Britain, France, etc., they relocated their embassies to Aden. And from there, he started to present himself as being the president of Yemen, when in fact he was not. And the Houthis, the group that is basically fighting against him, but I want to add that it's not only the Houthis that are fighting against him. There are also forces that are loyal to the former president.
Oh,
Ali
good.
Abdullah
I was going
Saleh.
To ask you about that.
Yeah, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was the former president who was forced by the Saudis in February of 2012 to resign as president so that the Saudis' man, Hadi, would become the president. So Ali Abdullah Saleh, and in fact, another police commander who refused to accept Hadi's orders, and in fact, several tribal chiefs as well, refused to accept Hadi's command, because they said that you are not the president. You cannot issue orders when you have already resigned as president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the situation that we find ourselves in today is that the Saudis have started bombing the positions that Houthis and Ali Abdullah Saleh's forces have occupied in the country. But the Saudis and the Americans have now openly come out in favor of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula.
Amazing.
As, as well as the terrorists that go by the name of the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So those groups are now openly by
it's
their
bombing
campaigns. Absolutely. This is the situation that we find ourselves in. In fact, what has happened is that the Houthis were able to capture the intelligence ministry in Sana'a, as well as in Aden, and they found out a treasure trove of documents that had the names of all of the American agents in Yemen. And that was the reason why the United States pulled out the 100 or so special forces that were based in one of the military bases in Yemen, because they realized that now not only the Yemenis that are working for them, but also their own forces are going to be in danger because they'll be captured, they'll be arrested for committing crimes against Yemen. So that was the reason why the U.S. pulled out its special forces on March 25th, just prior to the Saudis starting their bombing campaign.
Yeah.
And I also want to add, it's important to realize that if, let's say, a country is about to embark on an important policy, you would expect that that government would make an announcement about that policy from its own capital city. Instead, what do we find? On the evening of March 25th, the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C., makes that announcement in Washington, D.C. from his embassy. So here
the,
you are.
The only audience that matters to the royal Sauds is Washington.
Absolutely. So that's the situation we find ourselves in.
I have to ask you, this is Zafar Benghesh, and by the way, the site is
crescent-online.net.
Oh, you beat me. I wanted to be, yes, there's a hyphen, crescent-online.net.
Now,
but this problematic issue, and I was startled by it, the former president, who, by the way, has a certain amount of gravitas compared to the pretender.
Yes.
My understanding is he made his statement in Egypt. What is the danger? Egypt is part of the coalition that is bombing Yemen. Is there a difference of opinion? What's going on?
Yeah, okay. What happened was that on March 25th in the morning, obviously events were moving very, very rapidly. On March 25th morning, the compound where the fugitive president was living in Aden, that compound was bombed by a military plane. Now, it's not known as to whose plane that was, but the speculation is that the Houthis or forces loyal to the former president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, have definitely had control of some of the Air Force planes, and they may have bombed the compound of this fugitive president, Hadi, who then fled from the compound, and he obviously couldn't go to Aden International Airport because that was also then captured by Houthi fighters and Ali Abdullah Saleh's forces. So he actually took a boat and fled from Yemen in a boat, and he popped up in Saudi Arabia. And from there he was flown to Egypt, to Sharm el-Sheikh, where these Arab potentates had gathered so that they could not only deal with the situation in Yemen, but they have also, another proposal has been put forward that they want to create an Arab defense force, which would be spearheaded by Egypt. Now, I want to comment on that because it's important to understand that Egypt, under the military rulers, the military dictatorship is a basket case. I mean, the Saudis and these other medieval kingdoms have poured about $20 billion into the Egyptian economy, but with Egypt's population at 80 million and nothing being produced in Egypt because of the turmoil that has gripped the country since an elected government was overthrown.
They salted the clouds, but it didn't rain.
Exactly. So basically, it's a basket case. And so what this general has come up with is he thought perhaps if he were to propose that we should set up an Arab protection force that would take care of the problems that these various regimes are facing, and naturally the Egyptian army would be leading that protection force, and so the other government would pay money to Egypt so that the Egyptian military can be sustained.
Mercenaries.
Absolutely.
Well, no, but I still have a dangling problem. Where is former President Saleh?
He is in Yemen, and
he's in Yemen.
He is absolutely in Yemen. The former, when we are talking about former, like we are talking about now, two former presidents.
Two, yes.
One is Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was forced by the Saudis in February of 2012 to resign. Mm-hmm. So he's still in Yemen. He hasn't left the country.
When I read it, I misunderstood. I thought his comments were made in Egypt, but they have not. That's not the case.
No, that's not him. That's not him. No, well, it's the man who succeeded him, whose name is Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi, who is basically the Saudi man. Mm-hmm. He was placed there by the Saudis when Saleh was removed. He was forced to resign. So Saleh continued to remain in Yemen. He's still there. And there are troops that are loyal to him because he had been president for 30 years. And obviously he had built various, constituencies. And he does have some degree of support within the country.
Well, he's had some, it's an interesting history. The world got reminded recently that he didn't agree to the first Bush attack on Iraq and got into hot water with the Saudis over there.
Exactly. In fact, in 1991, when the Americans attacked Iraq, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was at that time the president of Yemen, he opposed that and he said, this is illegal. This is an attack on a sovereign Arab country. And in retaliation, what the Saudis did was that they expelled hundreds of thousands of Yemeni workers that work in Saudi Arabia, and they expelled them from there as punishment for Saleh's opposition to American.
A major irritant between those two states. It was quite brutal, wasn't it?
Absolutely, exactly. I want to also mention something else. You see, right now, inside Saudi Arabia, there are a lot of internal problems. You see, the Saudi regime is basically propped up on three pillars. One pillar, of course, is the royal family. The second pillar is their alliance with the religious establishment. And the third pillar is American support. Since the death of King Abdullah on January 23rd and the appointment of Prince Mohammed bin Naif, who was the interior minister until then, then after Abdullah's death, he was appointed as deputy crown prince, which means that now in the grandchildren generation of the founder of Saudi Arabia, Prince Mohammed bin Naif would become the king. Hmm. And he's not universally liked by the rest of the members of the ruling family or the royal family. In fact, there are cousins and let's remind ourselves that there are about 7,000 members of the House of Saud.
So would also be the citizens of Saudi Arabia, and everybody else doesn't count, right?
That is correct. Yes. You see, this is one of the curious things in Saudi Arabia is that they call it Saudi Arabia. I prefer not to call it Saudi Arabia because there are only 7,000 members of the House of Saud. But there are 28 million people in the Arabian Peninsula. And the rest of the people have not agreed to have their country named Saudi Arabia, as if the Saudi family owns that territory. Yeah. But anyway,
the United States of Bush.
Exactly.
Yes.
But within the Arabian Peninsula, within the ruling family itself, there are divisions. Then within the religious establishment, now there is a split. There are some members of the religious establishment that believe that the House of Saud is doing terrible things. They are violating Islamic principles. There are religious people in Saudi Arabia who would like to deal with other people on the basis of fairness and justice and proper principles rather than one man's whim or one family's whim. Mm-hmm. And then the third aspect is that even I believe my reading of the situation is that even the Americans are perhaps tiring of this ruling family because of their tantrums that they hit. And of course, we know that the U.S. is working towards some kind of an agreement with the Islamic Republic of Iran on its nuclear program. And if that should come about, I think the Saudis, I mean, already are feeling very, very jittery. But if that should come about, that would really undermine the Saudi position tremendously. So they thought that, you know, we are losing our influence all around. They tried to overthrow the government in Syria. They have failed, although they unleashed these organ-eating terrorists. They're trying it in Iraq, where they have failed. In fact, Iran's influence has increased. And now they see that, you know, these same people that are in some kind of an alliance with Iran in Yemen, that they are gaining the upper hand in Yemen as well. Yeah. So the Saudi regime is very, very jittery at this time. But I can mention something to you, that while they can use their air force, they will not be able to use their army for two reasons. Number one, Yemen is very difficult terrain. It's mountainous terrain, and it's classical guerrilla-type warfare territory. Now, the Saudi army, obviously, is not capable of fighting a guerrilla warfare, whereas the Yemenis are masters at it. Just like in Afghanistan, you have the Afghans or the Kurds, who are, you know, mountain people, and they know the terrain. They can fight a guerrilla war for decades. There is no problem for them. The second thing which I think the Saudi regime is very, very concerned about is, and I think they would perhaps be really, really spending sleepless nights, that about 60% of their army is made up of people of Yemeni origin.
Oh, boy.
Okay, now here is a situation. You know, why would those people want to fight for the sake of the Saudis?
Mm.
So you have a real, you know, real mixture over there.
Yeah, they shouldn't be fooled by the uniform. There's a human being inside it. By the way, let me mention, this is Zafar Benkash, crescent-online.net. And Zafar, I have to ask you a big question. You are originally, from Pakistan, certainly you know Pakistan. Why is Pakistan involved?
Okay. Basically,
not that you're responsible.
Yeah, that's okay. Let me explain that. Basically, what has happened is that the Saudis made a request to Pakistan that they wanted Pakistani forces to be sent to Saudi Arabia for the border at with Yemen, and what the Pakistani Prime Minister said was that he would look into it. But when he went back, the Pakistani military said, no way. We are not going to send our army to get involved in a conflict with another Muslim country. Mm. And in fact, all the official statements that have been made in Pakistan constantly say that we don't want to get involved in intra-Muslim fighting. Mm-hmm. But what the Pakistani government has said is that if the ruling family were threatened or the territorial integrity of Saudi Arabia were threatened, then we would be prepared to defend it because we have a defense agreement with it. There are some Pakistani forces that are already in Saudi Arabia. They are on contract, on a training mission, and currently they are conducting some exercises on the Saudi-Yemeni border. But my reading of that situation is that perhaps the Saudis simply want to give the impression that we have the support of the Pakistani military, and that if need be, then that we could use them.
Yeah. And very quickly, I have to ask you this. What about the allegation, and this is how they frame it, that Iran is involved? Is that merely rhetoric? What is Iran's interest in Yemen?
Iran is not involved in the Yemeni crisis directly at all. What they have said repeatedly, in fact, immediately after the Saudis started their bombing campaign, Iran not only condemned it, but it said that all the various groups in Yemen should be facilitated to get together to find a common solution to their problem, and there should be no interference from outside. So although I personally believe that Iran has probably supplied some military support to the Houthis, but I don't think that that can be of any significant quantity, because the Houthis and forces loyal to the former President Saleh, they have in their possession a lot of the weapons and equipment, etc., of the Yemeni armed forces as well as air force. So I don't think that Iran would have supplied a great deal of military equipment. What is true is that definitely Iran has sympathies with the Houthis, but that is based on the fact that the Houthis have been deprived of their rights for at least 50 or 60 years. I mean, you know, if you look at Yemen, it's the poorest Arab country, and if you look at the sort of geographical division in the north where the Houthis areas are, that is the poorest area of the whole of Yemen. And that means that there has been a deliberate policy for close to six decades to deprive them of their basic rights. And that was the reason that led the Houthis to stage an uprising and say, well, look, we are citizens of this country. Why are we being deprived of the resources that others are getting and we are not getting? So in that sense, Iran has said that the Houthis should also be included in the political system and that they should be given their fair share of the economic pie.
Yeah. And last point, there is no UN sanction whatsoever for this current attack by the 10 states coordinated none, by the U.S.
None whatsoever. In fact, about a week or 10 days prior to the Saudis launching their attack, the Saudis had at the UN Security Council proposed a resolution and sent a letter to the 15 members of the Security Council to pass a resolution authorizing the use of force in Yemen. The Security Council rejected that resolution. This was 10 to 15 days prior to the Saudis launching their attack. So in fact, the Saudis are in violation of the UN Security Council that rejected any military action against Yemen.
This might lead to a great debate there. Zafar Bengash, boy, we do appreciate it. I hope we can get back to you again. We've got a bunch of other matters we'd like to talk about. We're sorry it took us. I apologize for taking a while to reach you. Talk to you soon.
No problem. I just want to mention one other thing.
Yes.
That I've just completed a book on the Saudi regime. The title of the book is The Doomed Kingdom of the House of Saud. And I think by attacking Yemen, they have actually short-circuited their life.
Yeah, and maybe help the book sales. Crescent-online.net. Make sure you go and get that book. Thank you, Zafar.
Thank you very much, Phil. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. And you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM.